Thank you, Teresa. She always prepares so well. I appreciate that. Well, you may wonder why the stage is so empty tonight. We're having the pinning ceremony for Shorter's Nursing School tomorrow. The graduates will be here along with the juniors. They came today and rehearsed. We let them use our facility for that, and then they have a meal or something over here as well. So there's a whole lot going on up here. And I want to share with you something else that we're going to roll out Sunday morning just softly. For quite some time, I felt like we've needed what I call a family ministry at this church. And what I mean by that is where families get together for fellowships and then for missions. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to roll out this Sunday family ministry. And what we'll have, we're going to do all this through the Sunday school. Every age group, Ted and Billy are going to be in charge of it. What we're going to do is have three local church-wide mission projects during the year. And then we're going to have one during the summer that will be out of town. And it'll be for the whole family. We're also going to have a marriage enrichment retreat here. And we're already talking to somebody on a board with a couple out of Orlando. We want to do that out at Windshape, and if we can get corporate rates through Ben Farah at Windshape, we'll do a Friday evening, Saturday morning till noon. That way, if somebody has children staying with their grandparents and there's a hostage situation, they could be at the house in 20 minutes. Then what I want to share with you is we already have the first local missions project planned, and we have the place reserved. We were asked by an administrator at Pepperell Elementary if we would adopt Pepperell Primary and Pepperell Elementary to give them some assistance. There are many, many poverty-stricken, needy children at those two schools. So here's what we're doing. We've already reserved and paid the money for the Gilbreth Center for July the 28th. We're getting food together, like the snack pudding packs and things like that that they can carry to school. We'll give those away. We are also going to do hearing tests. We've got an audiologist that's supposed to do the hearing test. Did you ever get him? You had got him? Yeah, he will do it though. And then we're going to have the nurse is going to do vision tests from the school. A lot of the parents over there are clueless with parenting skills, and especially grandparents who are having to raise their grandchildren. They're desperate. We already have two professional counselors that will have a booth set up. Then we're going to have bags of school supplies ready for them, so that we can give those out. Then the director of the school lunch program, Delaine contacted her, and she said, we'll come and do lunch for the children for free. And then we've got several other things that we're going to be doing. There'll be some games set up for the kids. But it's going to be from 9 to 12 on July 28th. We're going to have to get there about 8 o'clock to set up. We probably won't get through taking down till 1 o'clock. Now listen, we're going to have our children's department, our youth, our adults, and our senior adults. Each class is going to be asked to provide certain items towards all of this. By the way, we also have Peach Care coming for the children that are not signed up for insurance. They'll do that. We're also going to share the gospel. And we're probably going to use the salvation bracelets that we're going to give out. So it's not just going to be material things. We're going to share the gospel with them and give them all the information we can about Pleasant Valley South and welcome them to come here to worship. One of the downsides, and I'm glad we did what God led us to do with starting the simulcast. One of the downsides of that is everybody doesn't get to see everybody every Sunday. The other thing that just sort of breaks my heart is our children and teenagers seldom ever see any of the senior adults. There's so many of you that are so faithful. They need to see that example. They need to follow in those footsteps. So the way we've designed this, all age groups are going to be serving together. And this will be at minimal cost to the church. It may be $1,000 or less for the church, and we're going to ask you to bring materials. So do you like that idea? All in favor say aye. All opposed? I didn't think there would be any. Ted, we don't allow too much opposition. They usually join another church and don't even say goodbye. So that's the first thing we're going to do. And what we're going to do is once a quarter during the school year, we'll be rolling out one of these local mission projects. Georgia Baptist Children's Home. Hope you'll be generous there. The Georgia Baptist Children's Home are not in the cooperative program budget. The only money they get is what they solicit and we give. I don't know why it's not in the cooperative program budget, but I want you to know they need our help. All right, let me ask you a question. Have you ever had a friend who deserted you? I was reading a story about Marcia. It was not Marcia Dudley, because that would be several volumes. But I read a short story about a lady named Marcia who called her friend, and she asked her friend to go to the movies. Her friend was named Tammy. Well, Tammy said, well, I have other plans. I just can't go. And she said, every time I call my friend Tammy, there it is right there. Thank you, Marcia. I appreciate that. Or was that Ken? Okay. If you just give him a rotary phone, that won't happen. But anyway, she said that I always have to call Tammy. Tammy never calls me. Tom, I think you need a little IT assist out here in the congregation here in just a minute, okay? His timing is way off. I needed that just a little earlier. We think about the word friendship, you know, we think about intimacy, we think about fondness, we think about a mutual drawing together of two people. But tonight, I just want us to look at friendship as this, a non-romantic relationship that is attachment-based rather than function-based. I'm not talking about people that you work with or do ministry with. I'm talking about people that you just like to be around. Well, you won't believe what I'm about to share with you. In September of 2016, the Chinese government issued a news release. They have a new law in China. They track their citizens, and according to their behavior, they use some technology to track this. They have what they call a social credit score. In America, we have what? A credit score. But there, they track how well you treat other people. At the end of the year, they review these. And if you haven't been kind to other people, then you're not eligible for their special concessions with businesses, and also you won't get the perks like public education and government health care. Now, that's not the way we want it in America, but the concept helps us to think about the way we treat other people. If you go to 2 Timothy chapter 4, and we look at verse 9 and 10, I want you to notice what happened to Paul. He says, do your best to come to me quickly, for Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia, and Titus to Dalmatia. Paul knew the value of good friends. When you think about his missionary journeys, you see that Silas helped him establish churches. Barnabas went with him, and he was an encourager in the ministry. Timothy was his son in the faith. Paul knew the value of excellent co-laborers. Paul went to his office one morning, and he opened the mail. And guess what he found out? Demas moved his membership, and he did not say goodbye. I have never met a child named Jezebel. I've been to a lot of labor and delivery units over the last 39 years, and nobody has named their child Jezebel. I've not even seen a child with a middle name of Demas. People just don't name their children Demas. Now, I want you to know that Demas is mentioned three times in the New Testament. You might want to write this down, Colossians 4:14, Philemon 1:24, and then in our text in 2 Timothy 4:9. Demas' name means popular. I find that interesting. His name suggests that he was well known and he was well respected. Now he's well known in the New Testament as a backslider. And anytime his name is mentioned, it's always in reference to his backsliding. So Paul is not far from being executed because of his faith, and he writes about his most faithful friend. And then he tells about the most unfaithful. First of all, a friendship collapse with Demas. Now, Demas is first mentioned by Paul in Colossians, which was written shortly after 1 Timothy and some 5 years before 2 Timothy during Paul's first imprisonment in Rome. At that time, Demas, along with Luke and Epaphras, they were some of Paul's closest co-workers and associates. We see in the book of Philemon, written about the same time from the same place, Paul sends greetings on behalf of Demas. He says, one of my fellow workers. So we can be sure that Paul had invested a lot of time, effort, counseling, special teaching into the life of Demas. And notice what happens. Demas resolved to serve the Lord decreased. And the reason was, he says, he loved this present world more than he loved God. The word coward could be used. His cowardice was greater than his commitment. And notice that word desert there means to totally abandon somebody. Have you ever had a friend that just totally abandoned you? We all have. Now notice the story of dedication. Back in Philemon 1:24, the Apostle Paul spoke highly of him. Paul names him along with these other, he says they are fellow laborers. That's what he calls Demas. Can you imagine the world's greatest missionary and you're being praised by him in the Word of God as you are a co-worker with Paul? So Paul gives an assessment of Demas' walk with the Lord. Now, when you follow Paul on his missionary journey, he did not run ads in the Galilee Gazette, missionaries wanted. He handpicked those who were dedicated, totally sold out to the Lord. Billy, when he asked for volunteers, after he gets the complete list of the volunteers, he has a meeting. I'm talking about his first meeting. There are several meetings before they deploy to Peru or Ukraine or Texas, wherever they're going. And he tries to explain what this is going to be all about. And if you can't handle this, that, or the other, this might not be for you. So Paul is hand-picking people to go with him. Paul was one who only had those who were totally dedicated to the Lord to be his co-workers. So Demas had been one who worked with Paul in the ministry. Perhaps he was his right-hand man. We don't know. They preached together. They witnessed together. They encouraged one another. And you can sense the appreciation Paul had for Demas in Philemon when he talked about him being a co-worker. Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 3:9, for we are laborers together with God. When God's people work together, we have much greater effectiveness. Now, when we first see Demas as a fellow laborer of Paul, you see one who's dedicated in his walk and his work. I like what Wendell Willkie, a man, went to see President Franklin Roosevelt Wilkie was visiting in Roosevelt's office, and he asked Roosevelt a question. He said, let me ask you a question, President Roosevelt. He said, there's this wimpy guy named Harry Hopkins that's just at your elbow at your desk all the time. Why do you want somebody like that around you? Roosevelt said, Wilkie, do you see that door right there to my office? He said, yes. He said, there's a steady stream of people that come in my office every day, and every single person wants something from me. He said, that little scrawny man that you see over there, I keep him by my elbow because he's never asked me for anything. He is here because he wants to serve me. Well, when we first meet Demas, he was a follower of Christ and he was a servant. But notice the story of desertion. Demas has forsaken me, abandoned, deserted me. He left the work of God. So he goes from a fellow laborer, now we see he is a deserter. U.S. military, Article 85, about desertion. The Uniform Code of Military Justice defines desertion like this: being absent from the unit without authority, with the intent to remain away permanently, or being absent with the intent to avoid hazardous duty or shirk important service. So Paul declares Demas as being absent. He's abandoned. He's deserted. He is a spiritual deserter. We have about 2,300 members here. Sunday attendance was a little low. We had 600. Some were ill. Some were on a trip. Some had family obligations. But over half of our congregation, they are spiritual deserters. That's true in every church. At least 60% of your people have deserted the Lord and His church. Desertion was rampant during the Civil War. I was reading with the Union Army, 1 out of 7 would desert. Confederate Army, desertion rate was just a little bit lower. Here is what is written about one of the Union soldiers, Hiram F. Eastman, Company A, 4th Virginia Cavalry. There's only one line about him in the entire regimental series. Hiram F. Eastman, Company A, enlisted, 4/23/61, deserter. You know, it's one thing to start well, but it's even more important that we finish well. And I want you to know, when Demas deserted, he limited the work of God. Verse 9, Paul said to Timothy, do your work, do your diligence to come shortly unto me. When people abandon ministry in a church and they walk away from God's work, that's one less person involved in kingdom causes. Somebody's got to step up. So when Christians quit working for God, the work of God always suffers, and there's always a shortage of workers. Now Jesus referred to this in Luke 10:23. The harvest truly is great, but the laborers are few. Every time one person drops out of God's work, the work of Christ is hurt. Now notice there's a story of distraction here. There's always a reason why people get out of God's work. Now, when Delaine's dad was mentoring me into the ministry, he said, son, listen to me carefully. He said, don't go after people that leave your church. Spend more time trying to reach the lost and new people than people that check out. I said, well, why is that? He said, because there's one of two things going on with the person that just left. He said, they either got their feelings hurt, or it's sin, or it's both. Let them go. And you know what? I've practiced that through the years. Now, if somebody leaves, I might write them a note. You know, what's going on? Is it us? Usually get zero response. You are wasting your time. Notice Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this world as it is organized against God is the enemy of the Christian. So he says, having loved the enemy more than he loved the Lord. Look at a closer reason why Demas deserted. He had a fascination with earthly things. I was reading the other day about a soldier who deserted his regiment, and when he was fought before the general, and I assumed he used some language that they all understood, and he was called the vilest kind of names for betraying his country. Here's what the man said who deserted. The soldier said, "I did not betray my fatherland, my country. I love my country and would even sacrifice my life for her, but I had to run. Because I despised the enemy so much, I couldn't stand the sight of his face." Wouldn't you like that? In Demas' case, it was not because he hated the enemy. Rather, he loved the enemy, the world. Now, he was not talking about the planet on which we live. He speaks of the way the people around us think, feel, act, and live. The Holman Bible Dictionary describes the world as all that is hostile, rebellious, and opposed to God, the forgetting of eternal thing. Just think for a minute. How many people that you know that used to be involved in this church, they're not here anymore, and they're not involved anywhere else? So many love this present world more than they do Christ and his work. Now notice a concrete friendship here. Over and over again in the scriptures, we find Jesus is caring about others. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. He had compassion on the sick and those who were hungry. He cared about others. We all care about people's salvation first, but second most important, calling is to others. I want people to remember me as somebody who cared for somebody else. First of all, he says we ought to love people. John 15:12, my command is this, that we love each other as if that, he says, we're to love other people. And you know, that's not easy to do all the time. You know, we meet some people and they forget who we are. How many times have you met somebody and somebody just told you their name, and in 15 seconds you can't recall their name? I had to put memory devices with people's names. Now, I don't use anything ugly, but I do have to use certain inanimate objects in my head to remember people's names. Somebody said you meet people who forget you. You forget people you meet, but sometimes you meet those people you can't forget, and those are your friends. I like the Arabian proverb that says, one to whom one may pour out all the contents of one's heart, chaff and grain together, knowing that the gentlest hands will take and sift it. Keep what is worth keeping, and with a breath of kindness, blow the rest away. In a British publication, the editor offered a reward for the best definition of a friend, and here were several of the entries. One who multiplies joys, divides grief, and who is honest. One who understands our silence. A volume of sympathy bound in cloth. A watch that beats true for all time and never runs down. Here's the winning definition. A friend is the one who comes in when the whole world has gone out. We're to love people with the love of Christ, with an unconditional love. You know, everybody wants friends. I've never met anybody that didn't want friends. I met a few that didn't have many friends, but never anybody that didn't want friends. Howard Hughes, when his empire was worth $4 billion, said this, "I would give it all $4 billion, for one true friend." Wouldn't you have loved to have been his true friend? And then assist them Proverbs 18:24. You hear me use this at funerals over and over. A man that has friends must show himself friendly. And there's a friend that sticks closer than a brother, which is Jesus. The other thing we need to pray for him in James 5:16. He says, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you might be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. I pray for some friends every single day. I pray for our people who are fighting cancer by name every single day. There's some businessmen that are in our church. I pray for them to have wisdom every single day. I've just made that my practice. There are people that have marriage problems. I pray for them. Then he says we need to forgive them in Matthew 6:14-15. For if you forgive other people when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others their sin, your Father will not forgive you of your sin. Sometimes we got to admit we're wrong. Other times, forgive others. All relationships require forgiveness. And then witness to them. Matthew 28:19-20. You know how easy it is? We talk about sports, hobbies, politics. We talk about everything with so much ease. Why is it so difficult for us to talk to lost people about Jesus? Well, I might be rejected. You ought to be a Baptist preacher. We're like a branch of poison ivy when a lot of people meet us. I was telling Delaine tonight, I said, you know, we Baptist preachers are an odd bunch of folks. Don't worry about rejection. Jesus was rejected. You will be too if you live for him. Sunday morning, I'm preaching a message entitled, How Popular Are You? Jesus said, if you're going to follow me, they rejected me first. And this is my paraphrase. Why should we expect anything different? So Jesus is teaching about prayer. He gave us the illustration of a true friend to be generous and act like a friend. There's a man named John Phipps that survived a train wreck back in 2005. Let me tell you what happened. It was in Glendale, California. There was a man, it was on January 26, 2005. There was a 25-year-old named Juan Alvarez. He and his wife had recently divorced. He was wanting to stir up some kind of sympathy from his ex-wife. So here's what he decided to do. He went to a busy train intersection on a road and parked his pickup across the tracks. He lined it up so that when a train would come, there would be a bad collision. But he was not trying to commit suicide, so I guess he had the tail end of his truck out where the engine would crash into it. He actually went out and put his truck on the tracks. But when the train was coming, he got scared, opened the driver's side door, and bailed out, leaving his truck on the track. Because of this, the truck was hit, and then two trains collided. And 11 people on the trains, they were passenger trains, got killed. And 200 people were injured. This man that I was telling you about, John Phipps, was a passenger on one of those trains. He had to be at work very early in the morning. He was asleep in one of the cars when this happened. He said when he woke up, he was pinned in the wreckage. He was bleeding profusely. And he said, here's what I did. I took the blood that was pouring down on my fingers. He said, I thought I was going to die. And I reached up to a seat and drew a heart, and put my kids. And he said, I was about to pass out, and I drew another heart. and he put Leslie, his wife. Now I want you to think about this. This man thought he was going to die because of this accident. He didn't leave a message for his boss. He didn't leave a message in blood about his financial portfolio. He just simply wrote about what mattered most, his wife and kids. And he wrote it in his own blood. I love the old hymns. We used to sing, "What a friend we have in Jesus." Do you know what? Jesus wrote your name and my name on that old rugged cross. What matters most in life? Faith, your family, and your friendships. What kind of friend are you? What kind of friend am I? Let's pray together. Lord.